Thank you, Roger. I want to start by talking about my two grandfathers. Arthur Gilbert Moore, known as Gilbert, was a soldier in the First World War. He served the Northumberland Fusiliers in northern France, and whilst he was there, he rescued one of his comrades from No Man's Land, for which he was awarded the Military Medal, which resulted in his colliery where he worked in South Yorkshire, as it now is, presenting him with the illuminated address that you see there. So he was 21 years of age at the time. I did once ask him, when I was quite young, "Grandpa, have you ever been abroad?" Because we hadn't at the time. He said, "Well, I did spend some time in France." That's what he was doing then. But my other grandfather was doing something different during the First World War. In this picture, which appeared in the Christadelphian magazine, he's seen on the left of the picture with a fork in his hand, a gardening or agricultural fork. That's a very posed picture. You can see nobody's actually been forking over that bit of field. And in fact, what he did was that he was allocated the job of working on agricultural machinery in Chester, because he was a conscientious objector. He did not go into the armed forces. He was actually pretty well exactly the same age as my other grandfather, but he opted not to do that, had to go to a tribunal, and his skills were used in a different way for national importance. But that illustrates the importance that we have of making a decision. My maternal grandfather was not a Christadelphian, never was. My pater one was, and he followed some principles which are derived from Scripture. Elpis Israel, the word is Greek for the hope of Israel, is a book that was written by Dr. John Thomas in the 1840s. He invented this word Christadelphian because the group of people he was working with were conscientious objectors to service in the army in the American Civil War. And in this book, Elpis Israel, he explored how conventional teaching of Christendom differs from what the Bible says. And he showed that the Bible makes it clear that the future of the world is in the return of Christ. God's kingdom will be established in this world. Christ is going to come back and do this. And he looked at the prophecies in the Bible, and he looked at the events of his day to see if he could work out how this was going to come about. And he was doing this at a time when there were hardly any Jews in the land at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea that was known by the name that the Romans gave to it, Palestine. And he saw that the return of the Jews, the things that we read about in that passage from Ezekiel, about the Jews being taken by God back into their own land, that was the crucial event. Just look at some things that he wrote in Elpis Israel. He said there would be a partial and primary restoration of the Jews. At a time when there were no Jews to speak of in Palestine, he said they're going to go back before the manifestation, that is, before the return of Christ. And that's the basis of the restoration of the rest of the tribes after Jesus has appeared in his kingdom. The pre-adventual colonization of Palestine will be purely political principles. There will be a turn in unbelief of the messiahship of Jesus and the truth as it is in him. This is what he said from looking at biblical prophecy. And they will immigrate there as agriculturalists and traders in the hope of ultimately establishing their commonwealth. but more immediately in getting rich in silver and gold by commerce with India and in cattle and goods by their industry at home under the efficient protection of the British power. And John Thomas concluded that it was a British power because of his interpretation of the term Tarshish that's used in the prophecies. So let's look at how right he was. There has indeed been exactly that, a restoration of Jews to the land of Israel in fulfilment of the prophecy that we read. It's purely political. It is very much not a nation that's gathered together for the worship of God. In fact, some of the most devout Jews who have returned there do not like their government because it is a secular government. And they emigrated as agriculturists and traders. John Thomas clearly believed that they were going to say, let's go to Israel so that we can establish our farms and our businesses. Whereas the reality was that they went there because of the need to escape persecution and prejudice. The trading and the commerce has followed on after that. And of course, the power that they look to mostly is not Britain to protect them in this, but the United States. We go on. In this expectation of prosperity by immigrant Israelis, they will not be deceived, for before the invasion from the north that John Thomas envisaged, it will be a land of unwar villages whose inhabitants are at rest. So not a military encampment, but a trading area. And he says, now any person acquainted with the 1840s present insecure condition of Palestine under the Ottoman dominion must be satisfied from the testimony that some other power friendly to Israel must then have become paramount over the land. And they would, that what he saw was that people would choose to go to Israel, Jewish people would choose to go to Israel, just in the same way that in the 19th century, many people were choosing to go to the United States to make their fortune, as you might say. But the truth of the matter now is that Israel is not a country that feels safe, and that the Zionist movement, which developed in the late 19th century, some years after John Thomas was writing, saw the establishment of a Jewish homeland as a solution to this problem of persecution. So we got some things right, but some things wrong. And that is how we should understand our study of prophecy, is that we can see the basic core policy that God has set down, but we do not get the detail right. What did happen during that First World War, when my grandfathers were doing their different things, was that a Jewish man called Chaim Weizmann earned the respect of the British establishment so that there was a promise that the British government would favour the return of the Jews to the establishment of a place in Palestine, though he did say that we'd have to think about the other people who lived there. So that was the Balfour Declaration from November 1917. And Britain did not continue with this policy. It was put on the back burner, at the very least, as time went on, as we shall see. But what did happen in Europe after the war? Well, Germany was defeated and made to make reparations. And they had democratic elections, and that's how they worked out. You can see the different coloured political parties. And you can see that the red, the light blue and the black party are dominant in that election. And you can see what parts of Germany they won, how the power was allocated by the German elections. It was no overall majority, a coalition, and it was really quite messy. 4 years later, in 1928, the map didn't change that much. But look what happened 4 years after that, the German election in 1932. This map has turned brown because another party has come up by being voted for, and that's the distribution of the votes and the representatives in the election of 1932. NSDAP, that's the German language acronym for the National Socialist German Workers' Party, or the Nazis, as we commonly know them. So we see how this sudden tide of opinion has resulted in a surprising party coming to power. And if you can look down here, that von Papen was the Chancellor of Germany before that election, but there was nobody nominated to be Chancellor after the election because of the horror that they had that this Nazi party had won. So it was the following year that the leader of that party assumed power as Chancellor, and there he is. And why he was so popular was because he looked at the needs, as he saw it, of the workers, and he opened factories. This factory that is opening now is one that whose product is quite familiar to all of us. It's the Volkswagen factory. So this was how things were happening in Germany after the war. Not what people were expecting, but of course that election and the events resulted in the totalitarian Nazi occupation, so that he was very quickly recognised as being an evil dictator. Charlie Chaplin actually satirised him in the film The Great Dictator, and the disguise that Chaplin is wearing is very thin indeed there, isn't it? He's clearly showing Nazis. It's considered to be one of Chaplin's greatest films. So the conflict that followed was this oppressive rule in Germany and Hitler's pursuit of racial purity, which led to the Holocaust, to the persecution of a number of different groups, but especially the Jews. He wanted to exterminate them. Resulted in, 80 years ago, Britain declaring war on Germany. War which ended in 1945. The League of Nations had given Britain the mandate for looking after Palestine, so that's a hint that John Thomas had got something right in his interpretation. But that mandate came to an end in 1948. And on the 14th of May, the State of Israel was declared. But the British government actively opposed Jewish migration to Israel and turned back ships that were approaching the Israeli shore. So, questions for you. Would you have thought it the right thing to do if you had been a citizen of Germany to vote for the charismatic leader of their Workers' Party, this chap Adolf Hitler, who was promising great benefits to the nation? But look what a tyrant you would have been supporting. I hope I wouldn't have supported him if I'd been there. But he had a purpose. Would you have refused to join his army, the Wehrmacht? A man called Albert Mertz was shot in April 1941 because he, a Christadelphian, refused to do that, to join the Wehrmacht. And if you were serving in the Royal Navy, serving your country, perhaps during the war and its aftermath, when ships were prevented from taking refuge to Israel, would you have been happy to be serving on board the Royal Navy ship that was doing that, when we know that it was God's purpose that Israel should be restored? So you can see the validity of staying out of these things, of elections and of military service, because we're seeing God's purpose being worked out. And to bring it more recently, we have another man who was considered a complete outsider by the established people of his party and of his country, and he was considered really as going to be an electoral liability, completely unelectable. But he had this populist appeal. There were areas, and there are areas, of the United States which were in industrial decline. They still are. He hasn't put that right. And there was this perceived problem of immigration from Mexico, through Mexico. That clearly appealed to the masses that he was going to stop that happening with his war. And he had various eccentricities which made the people of the government think that this is not the right man. What do I mean by eccentricities? Well, there's one. He said that this is Trump's own picture. He says he's not going to build an Italian Greenland, but the point is he's saying he's going to buy Greenland from the Danes, more or less whether they like it or not. These are considered liabilities. But look what else he's done. His election was welcomed in Israel. My daughter Rachel was in Israel in 2017, and she saw that poster. God bless Trump from Jerusalem. You can see how USA has been picked out from Jerusalem. Jerusalem is DC, David's capital. Washington DC is in the District of Columbia. Great pun there. But there's a faction in Israel that strongly welcomes the election of Donald Trump. And this is manifested too in his current advisers. You'll be aware that Donald Trump has gone through lots of people in his senior posts in his government. They have not lasted more than a few months, most of them, and some of them have been a matter of days. But currently, we have the Secretary of State, which is the equivalent of our Foreign Secretary, who is very strongly in favour of supporting Israel. You see him shaking hands there with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel. John Bolton, former head of the FBI, I think it is appointed National Security Advisor, and he is in favour of supporting Israel. And lastly, we have this couple, Jared Kushner, a Jewish man, married Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka, and they describe themselves as modern Orthodox Jews. And it's the Orthodox part of the Jewish spectrum in the United States that very strongly supports the development of Israel. So things have moved on. It is the fact that this president did something that others have not done before. He recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and his son-in-law and daughter went to celebrate this. And this was done on the 70th anniversary of the foundation of the State of Israel. So whatever you think of Donald Trump as a president, he is doing something in Israel. The other presidents that preceded him have all encouraged peaceful discussions with the Palestinians. It's worth pointing out, of course, that the president who preceded them, the president who was in office at the time of the Six-Day War, probably knew a lot about the return of Israel. He was, after all, brought up in a Christadelphian Sunday school, Lyndon Johnson. But when the Jerusalem embassy was opened, they closed the building, which was the consulate which the Palestinians had used. And it has opened up a gulf between the United States and the Palestinians, a change in direction. So he has moved the story of modern Israel on, and in a way that was not expected, and certainly was not a reason for anybody to vote for him, and has not been any of what part of people's thinking in deciding whether he was going to be a good president or not. So we see the things of early in the century, perhaps being early in the 20th century, being reflected in the 21st. In the Christopher magazine, before Britain entered the common market, as it was in those days, the European Economic Community, and Christadelphians, looking at prophecy, thought it was most likely that we would not enter. That's what they said at the time. It was always held that if Britain would ultimately be severed from the European grouping, even if she entered the common market. And they recognised in that article that there were lots of reasons for joining as perceived at that time. So what has happened there? Well, it's not quite worked out yet.